Welcome, friends. Dr. Veer Vadala here.
And I'm Dr. Krishna Vadala.
And we are the Vadala Bros. Welcome to Season 2 of our podcast, Vital Visions, where we delve into all things vital, empowering our community, one health topic at a time.
Absolutely. And to our returning listeners, it's fantastic to have you back. And to our new listeners, buckle up, because in this podcast, we explore emerging medical research, the latest in technology, and crucial healthcare topics that resonate with our community here at Norman Regional. Plus, we also sprinkle in some health and wellness tips for good measure.
That's the spirit. In each episode, we're also joined by incredible guests, from medical professionals to local community leaders, and even some of our friendly neighbors. Together, we tackle various issues affecting our community.
So whether you're a health enthusiast or just looking to stay informed about healthy living trends, consider this podcast to be your ultimate go-to resource.
So join us as we navigate the journey to healthier lives and explore the latest trends in well-being. Welcome to Vital Visions, where health meets community. Welcome back, everyone. I am Dr. Veer Vadala here, joined by my co-host,
Dr. Krishna Vadala.
And we are the
Vadala Brothers.
Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of Vital Visions, where we talk about everything vital. A critical part of any healthcare system is how the system responds to emergency situations. EMTs and paramedics are important healthcare workers that respond to these emergencies, provide immediate medical care, stabilization, and transport those patients in need. They play a vital role in saving lives and ensuring patients receive the necessary care during urgent situations. We have with us Mr. Hurley today, who wants to talk to us about a very important aspect of Norman Regional that is specific to us. MSTAT?
Yes.
Perfect. Krishna, do you want to introduce him?
Yes, of course. Well, today we're thrilled to have Mr. Kyle Hurley, who is the director of MSTAT here at Norman Regional. And we're so glad that he's here because there's a lot of questions that we have to ask him about. But first off, Mr. Hurley, just please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, thank you both for having me here. I'm a Norman native, born and raised, and I've lived here the majority of my life. And so my background, I was a swimmer, so I was into aquatics. And so I was a lifeguard. And so actually where I kind of got my healthcare interest, I mean, I do have a family background of lots of physicians and stuff. But as you all know, medical school, I was like, that sounds like a lot of schooling. So anyway, I went down the community college route and went to paramedic school after I kind of exhausted what I could learn and do, you know, just being a lifeguard and an instructor trainer, you know, for the Red Cross. So fell in love with EMS, got my first job at the old Porter Emergency Department as a tech. And so I just kind of worked my way up. So got my paramedic, did that for a while. Then I was a supervisor. And then at some point I went, you know, I think I want to do a little bit more than just you know, patient care in the field. And so that's when I went back and I finished up my bachelor's and then got my MBA in healthcare management. And so then I moved on into business development. So the nice thing is that I've been with Norman Regional for 24 years. So all the different roles that I've been in, I've gotten to stay here at this one health system in my hometown, which is great. So I did business development for a few years, did the complete other side of healthcare. Mm-hmm. And then at some point they wanted to do some restructuring in the emergency department leadership wise. So they said, hey, will you be the system manager for all three of our emergency departments? So, I don't know that I would have said yes to that if I had known a pandemic was coming. So, but you know, we all just did our best, you know, during that time. And so I managed the emergency departments for 3 years. And then, at the end of that, we had some people who retired and moved on. And so, and then I was asked to, come back to MSTAT now as the director, you know, over the service. So I was like, absolutely. So it's kind of where I started. So it's almost kind of like going home. And so that's a little bit about like my professional career. You know, I'm married. We don't have any kids. We do have one terrible dog. I'll mention his name, Jack, you know, the one we do not speak of. So he's a little cute little terrier mix. So, but, you know, all these storms that have been going on here lately, I mean, it's just like anybody who's got a dog, I mean, you know when the storm's coming.
Yeah.
So, but I try to stay active in the community. I was also during COVID, I was the president of the Norman Rotary Club, so kind of kept that going. So, and Rotary, fantastic organization, largest service organization in the world, do a lot of good here in the community, doing a lot of giving back. And then I also sit on the YMCA board of directors here in town, and then I'm also on the board for Sooner Healthcare Executives, which is the Oklahoma chapter of the American College of Healthcare Executives. And then just free time. I enjoy going to movies. I'm a huge movie addict. And then my wife and I, we love going on wine tours and stuff. We just got back from Colorado and did a lot of wine touring there.
Oh,
so.
My gosh.
Yeah, so.
You're a man of many hats.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just to, before we get started, sir, I heard you said you're a movie buff. Have you been to Flix Brewhouse yet?
I have not.
Oh, my gosh. It's amazing.
You should try it.
Okay, yeah. I need to go try it. Yeah.
Yeah. They even brew their own root beer, and it's delicious.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm there.
So, curious, before we move forward also, what's your favorite movie?
You know, I just got asked that the other day, and it's just, it's, there's so many different genres and stuff. I mean, I just threw out Shawshank Redemption, you know, just to kind of throw something out there. I mean, it's number one on IMDb right now, so, but it's absolutely fantastic.
Well, you can't go wrong with that one, so.
No, I you can't. I mean, the Star Wars is always kind of a good go-to and everything, but I feel like everybody, you know, says those. But, you know, Fifth Element's actually a really good
one. People don't really know about that.
Because I mean, it's got all the different, you know, like, elements in there. It's got good sci-fi. It's an original story. Yeah. You know, it's got a love story. I mean, you laugh, you cry, it's exciting. I mean, it's all the above.
What do you think about The Dark Knight?
Oh, Dark Knight's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely fantastic. So my thing is, first of all, Christopher Nolan is one of the best directors ever. Can't wait to go see Oppenheimer, which is out now.
My gosh, yeah.
So Hans Zimmer, who does like all his movie soundtracks. So, I mean, you watch if you watch the behind the scenes for like how he did Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, how he did Interstellar and stuff. Uh-huh. It's just, I mean, Hans Zimmer's just a genius.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, all those movies are fantastic. See, now I'm getting to think. I think maybe Interstellar, or actually, you know what? Maybe Inception is my favorite movie.
Inception's a great movie.
That's right. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like I get incepted every day.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
so, but
just someone's implanting an idea.
That's right.
Without us knowing.
That's right. That's right.
All right. So, well, thank you.
Of course.
For entertaining us, because we could go on for movies. And
oh, yeah. That would be our next podcast.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. Yes. The Norman Regional presents movies in our community.
Yes. That are vital to your, you know, viewing pleasure.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, man.
Okay. Yeah.
That's great.
Hence a new meaning to vital visions. Well, Mr. Hurley, I think a good place to start, and again, your service here at Norman Regional is really inspiring, and thank you for being here and
thank you
and
for
joining
having
us as a guest. And really goes to say how much of a family environment Norman Regional really has. We hear stories all the time that people have been here for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, and
oh, yeah.
it's inspiring. But I think a good place to start for us would be like, how does MSTAT like set it itself apart? Like, how is it different than other EMS systems in hospitals?
Sure. Yeah, no, great question. So there's different. So one thing to talk about are the different models of EMS services. So you have privately run. So like IMSA in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. So they have a public trust agreement with the city of Oklahoma City, but they are privately run. McLean Grady EMS has a different system, but I mean, it's still privately run, you know, out of Newcastle and Blanchard. You have those that are municipal based. So like Noble EMS is through the fire department. So the city runs, you know, their EMS. I mean, we see NYFD. I mean, the EMS for the city of New York City. I mean, it's municipally, you know, based. We're a little bit different. We are a hospital-based EMS. And so I actually think because we're in the public safety arena, like when you think of like police and fire, EMS is that third leg a lot of people forget about. And then, but we're also healthcare. So we're a hybrid, you know, kind of linking between the two. And being a hospital-based service, I really think that we get the best of all the worlds because we have all the resources of the health system. And so, and I mean, I went to paramedic school so I could go out and, you know, help people, you know, pre-hospitally. And so, I mean, working with other healthcare professionals just makes sense to me. And so, and since we have a great working relationship with the emergency department and that started well before me.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just continued the tradition, but, it's so there's that, but one of the other things that kind of distinguishes MSTAT is that we've also had very strong medical oversight and involvement. When I started, Dr. McCloy, so all paramedics and EMTs have to work under a medical director's license.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had Dr. McCloy, followed by Dr. Robbie France, who was fantastic. And for the past while, we've had Dr. Patrick Cody, who's one of our ER physicians.
Love Dr. Cody.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Cody is absolutely fantastic. I mean, he's involved. He gets the residents involved,
yep.
You know, with us. I mean, he's very proactive. I mean, we are... so one thing, I mean, here's an answer to the question, just one part of it, which is we are one of the few EMS services that do not carry any narcotics. And so, because one of the things, you know, as you, I'm sure both know, is that narcotics don't do well for a lot of patient types. Right. And so, similar sort of way for how in the emergency department, the residents are doing the fascia iliaca blocks, you know, for the hip fractures and stuff, so we don't have to give these elderly hip fractured patients narcotics and then they have poor outcomes. The outcomes have actually, I think, swung, you know, in the positive direction by like 90% because of what they're doing. And our complications from giving narcotics have decreased quite a bit. So, I mean, we carry Etomidate, we carry Versed, we carry ketamine. Yeah. And that's done really well. And Ofurmev, you know. Yeah. So we're not giving fentanyl, you know, we're not giving morphine anymore and stuff. We've had, and you know, with medications like ketamine, I mean, you have to find the balance, you know, for like how much, you know, appropriately to give to a patient. But another one of the things that distinguishes us also is that we strive for our 911 calls to be a dual paramedic service. There is just like there's a nursing shortage, there's a paramedic shortage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we figured out a long time ago that the best care that patients can get pre-hospitally is when we have two paramedics out there, because now you have somebody else, you know, at your license level that you can run things past. So is it cheaper to have EMTs out there? Yes, it is. So, but they're a lower license level. They have less training, less experience. And so, and the majority of time things are fine, but having an extra paramedic out there just means that the people that we run on are getting the best care they possibly can.
Wow.
Wow.
Thank you for that. So again, yeah. We learned a lot from that. I mean, especially you guys probably see this with this fentanyl problem that's been going on, and
it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere,
and it's we see it a lot. We see it at the jail.
Wow!
So people will come in. You don't think that they've overdosed on stuff, and then they will have stuff on them that will expose the detention officers. Then they become patients and stuff. So I mean, it's a real problem. I know everybody thinks. No, I shouldn't say everybody, but I know I've seen things out there saying, "Well, as long as there's just like Narcan available, well." I mean, fentanyl is such, I mean, as you all know, I mean, its potency is so high. Narcan might reverse them for just like a little bit, but they're just going to go back, you know, into their comatose state. Yep. Yep. And we're back where we were started. So, I mean, first of all, don't do any of that stuff. So anybody who's listening, don't do fentanyl, okay? If your physician prescribes something to you, then that's a different thing, but don't get the stuff off the street. Plus, you know, you don't know, you know, its purity or whatever it's mixed with and stuff. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think... Even so, we're primary care physicians, and even though like family med trained, I had some ER background. Like fentanyl's ever prescribed for me has been like with patches, and now
yes.
There's newer medications with buprenorphine and stuff that can be used for pain management as well. And
well, typically, I think the intention was always for end of life care or for patients with significant oncological pain,
right?
And so, and yes, even the fentanyl patch itself is at least the last 72 hours long.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we have completely the opposite when it comes to abuse. I mean, people are taking something that really should last 3 days, probably in about a few minutes.
Yeah.
And that's just so scary. And that's once again leads to why you just said earlier, giving them Narcan alone is not going to solve the situation because it's just so potent.
Correct. And I've heard that some of the substances, that's not just opioid, but sometimes could be contaminated with fentanyl is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Which is terrifying.
We started seeing things with synthetic marijuana, you know, like like over a decade ago and stuff. It was called K2.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of different things out there. So, but it's just like, I mean, I don't think people understand what they're putting into their bodies. I mean, they think, hey, I'm going to get a high and it's going to be fine. And sometimes that's exactly what's going to happen. And other times, I mean, it can be very deleterious, you know, for them. So,
So, moving from from the opioid epidemic that our country has faced, now talking about something that's really impacted our lives for the last 3 to 4 years, which is the pandemic. You know, I was an internal medicine resident during the pandemic, and that's something that I will be telling all my future generations, just how difficult and how crazy of a time it was to think of in the middle of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. What were some of the challenges that you faced during the pandemic, at least during its initial stage, and also kind of how it's different from now?
Sure. So when the pandemic started, so I was still in the emergency department. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we started finding out about things just like everybody else. And I think for us, you know, the first biggest challenge was just getting accurate information. I mean, nobody knew really what this virus was doing, how it was transmitted. I mean, we were worried that when we would do EKGs on patients, you know, that the paper printing out was going to become contaminated. And so we would do EKGs and then go print the sheet out, like, outside so that it wouldn't get – we didn't know. We didn't know how things were being, you know, transmitted. So, you know, the good thing is that Norman Regional formed a command post, and basically they were the ones that were assisting with everything, and that was great. The challenge, though, in the emergency department was that we were just getting such misinformation, you know, from everywhere. And then, you know, we were having to try to make decisions quickly because I didn't have, you know, time to wait till the next meeting to kind of figure out what we were going to do. We had to make changes multiple times during, you know, the middle of the shift because we didn't, you know, I did not want, you know, my employees, you know, our healers, you know, to become contaminated and stuff. So because we had, I think it was after the second patient who we found out had COVID came in because they came in through the front door of the Porter campus and they checked in with the triage nurse. Well, there was no barriers back then and people weren't wearing masks back then. So we had to quarantine, you know, two of these nurses. Fortunately, they didn't get anything. But after that, it was like, all right, we're going to have to start taking some PPE, you know, precautions and stuff. And so we actually had to stay about three steps ahead of the rest of the health system because we were seeing all these patients come directly into us. So, I mean, similar to like the primary care clinics, you know, dentist office, 911 calls. I mean, anywhere where you're seeing a patient for the first time. So we had to get, you know, ahead of, you know, the floors. We had to get ahead of surgery. We had to get ahead of everybody, you know, on that. And so we had to make changes. So part of that was, you know, communicating out the message. Here's what we're going to do. Oh, you know what? That was 2 hours ago planned. Now we're going to change it and stuff. So, I mean, it was definitely challenging. And I will say that the staff, I mean, stepped up and rose to the occasion. And we didn't, for a long time, we didn't have any exposures because we were taking, I mean, just like maximum PPE precautions, getting all the equipment that we, you know, we needed to. But it was also very confusing just, you know, how we communicated all of this to the public because they didn't know. So, I mean, they're just coming into the emergency department not knowing what's going on. And so, and then also with EMS. And so I wasn't over EMS at the time, but we worked with them, you know, I mean, every single day about things, about like what, where to take what patient, how to communicate things. The other thing that became very challenging from a legal perspective is EMTALA. And so, and for those who are listening on the podcast, EMTALA is the federal legislation that basically is the Emergency Medical Labor and Transport Act. Basically, it's basically what it says is if you are receiving Medicare or Medicaid funding, then if a patient comes into an emergency department, then you have to provide a medical screening exam to them before you can actually ask for payment and stuff. So in other words, we legally have to see everybody who shows up 250 yards within our campus. But there were people who were showing up just wanting tests, you know, and say, hey, you know what, we just want a COVID test. Well, we had to see these folks because they were kind of sort of seeking emergency care. So we had to work through some of the EMTALA implications, you know, as well. So and then also just working with the rest of the health system because, I mean, everybody was nervous about all of it. Nobody wanted to get it. Nobody wanted to take things back to their family and stuff. So, I mean, just, but having good, clear communication with everyone, just saying, hey, we're going to figure this out together. I'm not just going to go to a meeting and disappear. You know, we're going to get this out. And I feel like we did as good a job as, you know, you could.
Yeah. I think during that time, communities just rose together and no matter what system you were in and rose to the occasion.
Yeah.
How was the vaccination process like here?
I tell you what, you know, it's, I was so excited when the vaccines were coming out. I was just thinking, we're not going to have this for a while. But I was like, how lucky are we? I mean, not to have a pandemic, but I mean, just to be where we are in human history to where, you know, a new virus can come out. And within a year, we have got, you know, we have a vaccine. And so for me, it was actually, I tell you this, I mean, when I went to go get it, I mean, I actually got pretty emotional. And so, and I, after I got the, you know, I was taking the picture of myself. And so I sent it to my wife and I was like, I'm doing this for you, you know, and our family so we can be safe and everything. But I will say, because I know there are a lot of anti-vaxxers out there and a lot of people questioning things. Of course, this is a new thing that we're doing. So this isn't just like going to get your flu shot, you know, or something. So so there are a lot of people who are concerned about, rightfully so. But the numbers spoke for themselves. The busiest month that we had in the emergency department was January of 2021. So we had so many patient holds. And a hold is where a patient comes in, they're going to get admitted, but we don't have a bed for them. So we have to hold them in the emergency department while patients still continue to come in. So January of 2021 was insane. And that's not a Norman regional specific thing everywhere. Yeah. So, but that was when the vaccine was rolling out. February of 2021, our numbers plummeted down. And so the inpatient hold stopped. We didn't have as many visits. I mean, it was just like we're not seeing people die from COVID like we were before. So I was like, wow, that is the vaccine working. And that is, and I mean, the federal government pushing things out saying, all right, here are the folks that we are targeting who need to get the vaccine first and stuff. So, I mean, frontline workers, but then also the people who were older, immunocompromised, people who were, you know, in the high-risk category. So I love the vaccine rollout, but there were challenges on the employee side because there were a lot of people who were offered the vaccine who went, yeah, I don't know, I'm going to wait. So, yeah. And that was before it was mandatory. So, right. But again, the numbers spoke for themselves.
Yeah.
Norman Regional Health System is hiring. We'd love for you to join our team of employees who we call healers. We offer brand new and updated facilities, a culture of kindness that is team-focused, clinical excellence with accredited centers of excellence, and many more benefits. Please visit careers.normanregional.com to see all of our open positions.
And then the whole monoclonal antibody infusion thing came out.
Yes.
And that was another process in itself and trying to get people scheduled. And I'm sure, did Norman have that option too?
Yes, we did. And there were some nurses from the infusion clinic who did amazing work.
Yeah.
And so, and these are the folks who were kind of sick, but not sick.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, and they went over and I can't remember, I mean, but it was several hundred patients, you know, that went over there and not a single one of those patients got admitted afterwards.
Yeah.
So these are people who were tested positive and they were starting to show maybe some symptoms and stuff. And they went over there to the infusion clinic and they did the monoclonal antibody infusion. And I was just, I mean, that's another modern day miracle.
I'm exactly.
Just like, wow, what is going on? We are some smart people. Yeah. Someone is.
Yeah.
And obviously, we don't want to wish another pandemic upon ourselves, but for a while there was a scare that monkeypox could become the next COVID.
Sure.
Do you think we have learned enough about how to integrate services and how to manage another pandemic possibly?
I think yes, but I will also say that very similar to a tornado or a flood or something coming through, the people who go through it, I think, are going to be the ones who are probably going to be the best prepared for the next one. Mm-hmm. I think the further we get away from this pandemic, so let's say the next pandemic isn't for like another 50 years or something like that, I mean, I won't be here, you know? And so, I mean, hopefully we've learned enough lessons and put things into practice and policy so that the next generation, you know, can be prepared for that. I think if a pandemic were to occur now, I mean, we're all like, yeah, we're ready, you know, because we've had to, I mean, and just also getting involved, say, like, you know, beyond the health system, just getting involved, say, like at the city and the county and the state level and the federal to a certain extent. But I mean, there was a mayor's task force group that, you know, the mayor, Bria Clark at the time, put together. And basically it was just all the folks. I mean, all the key folks. You had, you know, the head physician up at OU, he was telling us everything, was giving us all the updates. And then, you know, you had the heads from the fire department, police department, from us, county health department. And so it's just like you're having all the folks, you know, talking, you know, in the same room or via Zoom. And the mayor's just like, what do you need from me? You know, and stuff. So, I mean, it was very, very helpful. So I think if something were to occur here now, I think we'd be prepared. I mean, I say we'd be prepared. I think we'd be as prepared for it as we could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's amazing. And that's kind of what MSTAT's also doing, right? I mean, I've been reading about MSTAT and talking about how we're it's all about disaster preparedness and hazard management. Could you just speak to that a little bit more?
Sure, of course, yeah. So we have people who are hazardous materials trained. And so, in other words, when that train goes by and is carrying ethyl methyl bad, you know, and spills, you know, we have people who can, the fire department would be the primary responder to that, but we're trained in how to handle, you know, exposures to hazardous materials. From a disaster response team, we have a disaster medical response team, the DMRT. And there's, Oklahoma has trauma regions and disaster regions set up. So we're part of Region 6. And so we respond to the other areas around us. So we will mutual aid to other areas that need assistance. So for example, when we had The tornadoes going through in February and then also in April and stuff. So yeah. When we had, I mean, ours was crazy here, but then also the ones that were occurring in McLean County, the ones that went east of Shawnee. So our DMRT team, I mean, that overwhelms the EMS system over there. So we have mutual aid agreements with all of them, which means if they need help, we go help them. If we need help, they come help us. And so we were in Shawnee the whole night. You know, there was a nursing home that got hit that had, I think, like 60 residents, and they all had to be moved away. You know, and so nobody got like bad hurt, but I mean, you have a building that's collapsed, and so you got to move all these residents. And so one EMS service can't do that, so we went over there to help out. So obviously, because we're in Oklahoma, I mean, we're very aware of natural disasters. And so, but it's kind of like we do this and everything, but each one's unique. And so, but we have a great command team, you know, at MSTAT. We have a whole bunch of crew chiefs. Those are the supervisors, and they've all had, I mean, I just look around, they've all had tons of, tornado and disaster experience. So it doesn't matter who's on shift, they're ready and they know what to do.
And, it's just nice to hear and having like a feel of security, knowing like their services like MSTAT are available. And we can't thank your team and the healers affiliated with MSTAT enough for all of their service.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Well, sir, another thing that we like to talk about in this podcast is we hope that we have some aspiring healers themselves, some students looking into going to a career that's kind of tailored towards the healthcare industry, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think a really good topic for us to cover is like, hey, what is the difference between an EMT and a paramedic? How do you approach that schooling? How do you go up that ladder?
Sure. Sure. So EMT or emergency medical technician or a basic EMT all means the same thing. Just means that they've had about a semester of school. And so, and they have learned, I mean, it's just what the name implies, basic. I mean, they've basically learned how to do some basic patient assessments. They can do certain things. I mean, they learn CPR, you know, as good as you can, but they learn splinting techniques. I mean, in basic EMT, you learn how to deliver a baby. Not that you need an EMT to deliver a baby. Women have been doing that for thousands of years prior to any of us. So, but you understand that, you know, that process a little bit better. But it's really designed to kind of like help the paramedics, you know, on calls and everything, to anticipate, you know, like what they're doing. But EMTs can also function on their own. They're going to be limited in their scope of practice, but they also can still do, you know, quite a number of things. And so, and there's schools around here. Oklahoma City Community College, you know, has an EMT and a paramedic program. OCU OKC has a great program. Gordon Cooper and Shawnee has one. There's a number of places around here that have them, and we see pretty much the majority of those students, you know, come through us. And then paramedics going to take a little longer. It can take a year or two, depending on which program you go through. And then the training for that is going to be a lot more extensive. So, and it's the way I describe emergency medicine is, I mean, you're a jack of all trades, a master of none. So, I mean, you're getting training in cardiology, in pediatrics, in psychology, in geriatrics, in neurology, in trauma management, all of these things and stuff. So, and what's helpful is that those areas that, you know, maybe we don't know as well about, I mean, we've got a specialty physician who can assist us with things. I mean, our ER physicians are great resources for this, and they will come do training for us quite a bit. But back to the student stuff. So, I mean, if somebody were to be interested in this, I mean, they could go to any one of these schools, you know, and apply. You do have to apply, and then they have to accept you, and then you get in. And then some schools are, for the full paramedic, I mean, it might be an accelerated program where they're doing it in a year. More traditional is spread out over four semesters, so 2 years. And then what they do is they go to school and they do some practical, they do some lab work where they're practicing certain skills, you know, splinting skills, IV skills and stuff, intubation skills. So, I mean, paramedics have to be masters of airway management. Mm-hmm. And then they do clinicals. And so they come out and they ride along with us and get to practice all those skills. And so, so for anyone who's, you know, interested in doing that, I mean, there's great schools around here, you know, and so great programs. And then come hang out with us and see if, you know, our service makes sense to you. And if so, then, hey, put in an application.
That's amazing. And I heard MSTAT has like an externship program.
Yes. So we started this about a year and a half ago. So I've been in my role at MSTAT for about 2 years now. And so when I came on board, we lose paramedics every year to other services such as fire departments. I mean, they have a state pension program that it's very difficult to compete with. Some go to the police department. We've had several who, you know, have gone on to medical school and stuff. So, but our extern program really kind of came about because we were losing a lot of people very quickly to the fire department. So we know when the fire academies are because everybody like applies, not everybody, but we did lose a lot of folks very quickly. And I went, you know, we need to be able to grab folks earlier in the program. So because we had EMTs and we have paramedics. And so I came up with the idea of a paramedic extern program, and basically what it is it's an EMT who says, I want to go to paramedic school. And so what we do is we give them a full-time job. And so our paramedics, some of them work 12-hour shifts full-time, some work 24-hour shifts like the fire department. Wow. So I did that for 15 years. I don't want to go back to it, but there are a lot of people who enjoy it because you end up working only 10 days out of the month.
Yeah.
And that's 10 24-hour days, but it's still 10 days out of the month. And so anyway, so you get a full-time job, you know, with us, and we basically schedule your, you know, your schedule around your school schedule. And so if you need to be off for school, we get you off for school. The other nice thing is that through Norman Regional, through HR tuition reimbursement, and then also our Norman Regional Foundation, you can apply for scholarships. So
wow.
if they work it right, they can actually get all of paramedic school paid for.
That's amazing.
So, oh yeah, absolutely. That's I wish I had that when I was.
I know, right?
Yeah, that's a really good offer. That's a great offer.
Yeah, and that is kind of back to what I was saying before. That is one of the huge benefits of being a hospital-based healthcare system or a EMS system. So because we have the benefits of, you know, tuition reimbursement and having a great hospital foundation, you know, that supports us, you know, with scholarships. Yeah. So, but the extern program. So when they're done with it. They also get like a little bit of a pay bump, you know, as they move through the program. And then after they're done, they take their what's called their paramedic registry, which would be the paramedic version of the NCLEX for nursing. So they take their registry, and after they get their card, then they have a guaranteed paramedic slot with us.
Are you looking for a doctor? Call our community call center to be matched with a doctor or clinic near you. Speak to someone today at 405-515-5000.
So they get a job afterwards.
They got a job. They already have a
that's
job.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It works out well.
Yeah, right. That's right. Win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
So kind of touching base again with students and soon-to-be prospective healers, one of the things that I'm doing kind of on the side is getting an MBA, and you also have one too,
yes.
I believe from Southern Nazarene.
Yes, correct.
And so how do you think getting an MBA has really helped you like on a daily basis in your role?
I think, yeah, great question. So I went back to, my career aspirations when I was like, hey, you know, I'd like to go back to school and kind of do some of the things. I mean, my career aspirations really were to get into hospital administration. And so, and I mean, you got to go back, you got to have the right schooling and everything, but also, you know, have to have a good diverse background for things. So I think getting, you know, my MBA really helped out because I'm understanding the other side of healthcare, the business side of healthcare. So the marketing aspect, you know, the finance aspect, the accounting aspect. I wanted to be able to have a conversation with the chief financial officer intelligently, you know. So I got to meet with our previous one when I was early in my MBA school, and he sat down and went over all the hospital finances, you know, with me. And so that was really, really nice. He started out by saying, hey, do you know what a balance sheet is? And I was like, yes, sir. And he goes, okay, good. You just saved me an hour. So anyway, but it's important because, I mean, healthcare is a business. And so on the front side of things, you know, on the patient care side of things, we don't necessarily think about that. We don't think about, okay, hey, you know what? I just keep opening up all these sterile packages and stuff and whatever. I need it and stuff. Whereas, you know, on the business side, we're like, all right, that's wasteful and stuff. I mean, we have to control our expenses. But it's also, I think, being proactive and thinking about, like, where can we go, you know, with things. So one of the things that I was tasked with early on was making MSTAT more profitable, you know, in the healthcare system so that we're, you know, adding, you know, not just intrinsic value and, you know, patient care value, but also monetarily, you know. And so, and it took 2 years, but I mean, we were turning a great profit, you know, adding that back into our bottom line, you know, for the healthcare system. But it's also being able to interface with all of the other non-clinical healthcare folks, you know, within the health system. So it's been very, very helpful.
So kind of, I like what you said about healthcare being a business, right? And so one of the things, and I keep kind of going to the pandemic, but one of the things that we have always kind of heard or assumed is that the pandemic really did hit hospital systems hard. There is that notion out there, which is why sometimes they've had to cut jobs, in some cases in order to cut costs. But to me, if there's more people getting sick, logically, wouldn't that mean that the hospital was actually making more money because you're having more ER visits, more hospital admissions, technically, right?
Yeah, no, great question. So it depends. So more volume typically. So if I were to just kind of take a look, you know, like at the business case of healthcare, volume solves certain problems and creates others. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if you already have a negative margins, so in other words, like your business is losing money, more volume is typically probably not going to help that out. In other words, you're just going to lose money faster. And so, but if you are a profitable service, you know, the more volume should help out. So it makes sense. The problem with the pandemic is that, and this is also another side of, you know, getting your master's in business administration is the economics of it. And so, and the economics, I mean, we talk about supply and demand. And so where was the demand? The demand was for nursing, you know, in New York, in Washington, mm-hmm. you know, in some of these hard hit areas. And so the high demand, well, guess what also came with the high demand was the cost, you know, of healthcare went up. I mean, it is like one of the top, for our GDP, for our country, it is one of the top things out there, you know, what we spend for on healthcare. And so, and then the supply chain issues, that was also another thing that got hit hard, because now you have people working in, you know, getting supplies, medical supplies, all those folks are getting sick. Well, the demand is still going up, you know, for that, but they can't keep up. And so what do? They raise their prices, you know, mm-hmm. so it's like, well, we can't do this for everybody, but we're going to give it to like the highest bidder and stuff. So, I mean, just watching the economics of healthcare, you know, during the pandemic, I mean, it was just, I would say from an academic perspective, I mean, it was impressive to see it happen. Living through it, it was a nightmare,
of course,
because now we have nurses who are leaving to go do contracts. Well, that hurts us. And so, and then when their hourly wages started going up because they're doing contracts, now everybody wants that. So everyone feels that they deserve, you know, more pay. And I get it. But it's also, that's why hospitals across the country were having negative bottom lines, you know, for the past 3 years. I mean, yeah. The federal government helped out a little bit, you know, with that, with PPP, you know, ARPA and stuff, but I mean, it wasn't enough. And mm-hmm. so, and we're finally at a point now where we're able to kind of like right the ship, you know, or balance, you know, things out financially. But it's, that's why you can't just leave that to the CFO. And mm-hmm. so the CFO cannot be the only person who understands hospital finances and stuff. So I think that's why having more healthcare leaders, you know, who understand, you know, business and finance and stuff. So, because if you can talk both languages, then I think all the better.
So the issue with the pandemic was it wasn't just a matter of people getting more sick, but it was also because you had a whole system kind of crashing down, the economic system. That's where the majority of the damage to the hospital systems was coming
absolutely.
From, because of rising costs, because absolutely. Of supply issues and so on.
Yeah, okay, absolutely right. Yeah.
Yes, it's very interesting. I think the pandemic in general has kind of like changed how we look at jobs a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe it affected, I mean, we've talked about this before on the podcast, but maybe affected burnout rates and things like that too. But have you seen, I guess after the pandemic, have you seen like a rise or like a fall in people looking for healthcare jobs, or have you seen a change at all? Or
we've seen, so I mean, during the pandemic and also post-pandemic, so I'll speak for nursing and I'll speak for paramedics. So nursing, we saw a lot of emergency department nurses leave because they're like, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put my family at risk. You know, I'm getting paid the same amount that I have, you know, for however long. And so they're like, I'm going to go do home health. I mean, that's just, I mean, the hours are better and, you know, I don't have to worry about like walking into the next terrible bug that I'm going to take back and get my kids sick with. Mm-hmm. So there was that. And some people just got out of healthcare completely. They're like, you know what? I'm out. With paramedics, because of the nursing shortage, so a lot of healthcare systems started realizing that paramedics can do more than just 911 calls. Mm-hmm. And so now we've got paramedics working in cath labs. For a while, we've had paramedics working in emergency departments, which that makes sense. But they're working in cath labs, they're working in ICUs, they're working in other non-traditional paramedic roles, and they're doing all their paramedic skills, because your paramedic is your person who can, who does all your advanced cardiac life support drugs, who can do your airway management, who can run your code for you, who can do those critical things. And so what that does is, now since there's more options for, you know, paramedics, which great for my profession, I mean, that's fantastic, but also from a staffing in 911 truck, you know, from an EMS system, it makes it more challenging, because now the market has grown for paramedics, and we were already short before, and now we're definitely short now as far as like getting, you know, new folks coming in.
Wow. That's really cool. Okay, so we'll take a step back from the pandemic and just talk about more about MSTAT and how we're involved in the community. We heard that MSTAT does a lot of community outreach, and I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Sure, yeah. No, and being part of the community and also being part of the health system, man, really helps out. So we do a number of things. Some of those are, we do a lot of standbys for different events. Some of those we get paid for, some of those we volunteer. I mean, we pay the staff, and I mean, the system we don't charge for, such as we always have a presence at the major events like 4th of July. So everyone's out at Reeves Park, or, you know, at the park up in Thomas Park up in Moore. So we will do standbys for that. When we're doing Medieval Fair, so you know, we always have a presence for that. Norman Music Fest. You know, we're always out at that. Every single OU home football game, actually pretty much every OU athletic event, I mean, we're pretty much at and stuff. And so we have a great working relationship with the OU athletic department. So they want us everywhere. So I'm like, that's great. And then some other things. I mean, we go do demos. I mean, a lot for elementary school. So we'll get a counselor who calls us and says, hey, can you do like a touch a truck and just kind of like show the third graders this? And that's fun to do. We'll go over to Safety Town, you know, and we talk about safety because they're learning biking safety and stuff, and so we go over there and talk. One of the things that Norman Regional has done for a long time for third graders in this area is Kids Are Special People, and we do a demo for that and stuff, and so we're getting, you know, we're exposing, you know, children at a young age to, you know, who we are and what it is, and just because you see an ambulance, it's not a scary thing, you know, we're here to help you out, you know, and stuff, and so, you know, teach kids on how to call 911. So, and we also interface anywhere we're doing, the police or the fire departments are doing a demo, we're probably there as well. So, October 2nd, at the Sooner Mall, we'll be doing National Night Out, you know, again. So, and that's just where you have all the public safety agencies come out, a lot of different things. Norman Regional actually has a pretty decent sized presence there. Uh-huh. And, you know, and the community just kind of see what you do. We bring out our disaster trailer. We bring out a lot of our SWAT medic stuff. So we have SWAT medics that work in conjunction with the SWAT officers, and they bring all their gear out. We bring all of our bikes out so they can see what we do. Every year we do demonstrations for Leadership Norman. And so, I mean, the next round of leaders for Norman, they get to see what we do. So, yeah. I mean, all these things.
So the next big event is October 2nd, you're saying?
Well, I would say, you know, when football season starts up, that's when the big events are going to be occurring. So we actually had a very challenging thing when Norman Music Fest was happening, because it was also at the same time that there was a concert occurring at the stadium. And so, and it was, you know, coined Fill the Stadium. So we've never done two major events at the exact same time in Norman. It's always like just the football game or just a music fest. When you start like combining, overlapping those things, so we as a public safety community, we meet, we have public safety meetings actually in this building at the Well every month. And so police, fire, EMS, dispatch, Cleveland County Sheriff's Office, the health department, we all show up and we just talk about, you know, anything going on in Norman and, you know, any interagency things that we need to talk about. We started meeting every week to plan for that because, I mean, as you can imagine, I mean, doubling the size of Norman, you know, for those events is very concerning, you know, from a public safety standpoint. So everything went fine. Actually, the events were smaller in attendance than anticipated. But we also think that with the SEC, you know, coming, you know, a year from this fall, I mean, we're just going to have a lot more traffic, you know, coming in here. So we want to make sure that as a public safety community that we're ready to meet that demand.
Yes, sir. I feel like Oklahoma's just really growing.
It is. It is. Great time to be here.
I know. I used to, you know, tell everybody that Oklahoma's the best kept secret, but now everyone's found out about it.
That's right. That's right. They're coming. They're coming. Come enjoy our heat and humidity. Yes.
Well, Mr. Lee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah.
This has been an educational experience, eye-opening, all the way from the resources that our Norman community has to a special field that young minds can attain to acquire and be be a part of just not just your community, but emergency staff and healers. And so we can't thank you enough for being here with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time and, and answering all of our questions. And really, I think you did a wonderful job of explaining the business aspect of healthcare. And I think that's often understated and also difficult to understand. And so I think it took a person of your experience to really be able to put that in very simple layman terms. I really appreciate you doing that for us.
Thank you.
I felt like you're the perfect person to do that because you've seen both sides. Yeah. And it's not something that they teach us in med school or... Right. You know, we're books, clinics, then they just throw you in it.
I'm 4 hours to sleep every night.
So. Yeah, good luck with your MBA. I applaud you for doing it.
Thank you.
And so thank you again, sir. Okay. And thank you, listeners, for joining us today. And as always, be safe, be healthy, and stay classy, my friends.
And stay out of trouble.
Vital Visions, the Vidala Brothers podcast, is a Norman Regional Health System podcast. Hosted by Krishna Vidala, MD, MPH, and Raghavir Vidala, MD, FAAFP. Senior producer and editor is Jim Goldsberry. Co-producer is Emily Ehlinger. Research is by Krishna Vidala, Raghavir Vidala, and Emily Ehlinger. Support is from Integrated Marketing and Norman Regional Health System. Email us your questions to vitalvisionspodcast@nrh-ok.com.